as the standing up of the dead ones. It springs forth, does the body at resurrection, in a state of corruption. You put a mortal body in, you get a mortal body out. When the process of rebuilding is complete, including the judgment process, it is raised or caused to exist in a state of incorruption. It springs forth in a state of dishonor. But when rebuilding is complete, it will be in a state of glory. It springs forth in weakness, but is rebuilt into a state of power. It springs forth a natural body. But when the process of rebuilding is complete, it will be a spiritual body. Make sense? Makes perfect sense, doesn't it? You know where I got that from, young people? Brother Thomas. He wrote that in 1866 in the book called Anastasis. It's well worth reading, providing you bear in mind there are a couple of things which he didn't get right. But he got that right. And yet there's been confusion in our brotherhood ever since. If we were just to go back to him, we would understand what Paul is saying in this context. So then, what about the end of the process? There are three stages of resurrection, and here they are. There is the seed body stage, there is the sprout body stage, there is the raised body stage. As we have seen, the seed body stage, sowing into the earth, is the burial of the dead body. But after a time, in the right conditions, you see life springing above the ground. This is the sprout body stage. This is the standing up of the dead ones. But we know that there has to be a judgment process. There has to be a sifting in order to glorify some and remove others. So that is the final stage. The raised body stage includes judgment and it leads to glorification. Just as you see the magnificent head of fruit in the field, whatever it might be, corn or wheat, you see magnificent head of fruit as a result of that process. The seed body has to die. It sprouts into new life. And then when it has fully grown, you see the end result. That is the way that you and I, if we are to be involved in resurrection, and let's hope we're not, but certainly our grandparents who were in the truth, and others, of course, down through the ages, millions of them who will be held responsible to judgment, many of them will come forth and they will receive the end result. They will be rebuilt again into a state of glory and immortality. And Paul goes on to speak about that at the end of chapter 15 here. Now, I want to show you how this works out in a typical way in the life of Daniel. I want you to come back to Daniel chapter 10. In Daniel chapter 10, in the early part of the chapter, Daniel sees a vision of what we call the man of the one. It is another way of describing Christ and the saints in glory. He sees that in verses 5 through 6 of Daniel 10. But then we have Daniel going through a typical death, resurrection, judgment, and glorification process. Now, he's a very old man. It is the last year of his life. He dies in this year. And God does something very dramatic for this man. So we see in verse 8, he says, "Therefore I was left alone and saw this great vision, and there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned in me into corruption, and I retained no strength." So here is a man who finds himself totally without strength. In fact, worse than that, verse 9 says, "Yet heard I the voice of his words, and when I heard the voice of his words, then was I in a deep sleep on my face, and my face toward the ground." So Daniel enters into what you might call a typical death. He is flat on his face on the ground in a deep sleep. And we know that death for God's saints is described as a sleep. It's a deep sleep. So Daniel is typically dead in the last year of his life. And there are three stages of Daniel's resurrection. Firstly, he is, as it were, reformed and given life. You look at verse 10. "And behold, a hand touched me, which set me upon my knees and upon the palms of my hands." It's got to be life, doesn't it? So he's on his knees and hands. "And he said unto me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak unto thee, and stand upright, for unto thee am I now sent." Standing upright, that's anastasis, the standing up of dead ones. And so he says at the end of verse 11, "I stood trembling." Now, he's on his feet, and he has to be strengthened to stand up in order that he might approach the judgment seat. But of course, we know the outcome for Daniel, because in verse 12, he's told, "Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thine heart to understand and to chasten thyself before God, thy words were heard." In actual fact, this is a reference to the 3 weeks that preceded this event. For 3 weeks, God had waited before he answered Daniel's plea in verse 2 and 3 of this chapter. It says, "Thy words were heard, and I am come for thy words." But then he talks about the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstanding him and so on. That's why he delayed for 3 weeks. Then he says, "I am come to make thee understand," verse 14, "what shall befall thy people in the latter days." So Daniel is given a promise of things to come. And then verse 15 says, "And when he had spoken such words unto me, I set my face toward the ground, and I became dumb." So here is a man who's been stood up on his feet, but he's dumb, can't speak. He has to face the judgment seat of Christ. And so he's strengthened for that. Look at verse 16. "And behold, one like the similitude of the sons of men touched my lips. Then I opened my mouth and spake." So he's given sufficient strength to speak at the judgment seat of Christ. And then comes the approval of verse 18. "Then there came again and touched me one like the appearance of a man, and he strengthened me." Read, young people, in the context, in a typical way, read, "he immortalized me." Because that's what it represents. The strengthening of Daniel after he has given expression at the judgment seat of his life and he's approved by the judge. The strengthening of Daniel is him typically being immortalized. And so it says, "O man greatly beloved, fear not. Peace be unto thee. Be strong. Yea, be strong." And he will be strong. He will be immortal. That's the end that awaits the faithful like Daniel, a man greatly beloved of his God. For a lifetime of faithful service and commitment to the salvation of his people, though they were, of course, in captivity in Babylon. In Acts 24 and at verse 15, Paul said, "I have hope toward God, which they themselves, the Jews, also allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust." That's where we started, young people. Enlightenment is the ground of responsibility. If we are enlightened and we know what we should do, we will be at the judgment seat of Christ. The only proviso I put in there is that God knows our hearts. He knows at what stage of life we are at. He knows whether we are too young or it's too early for us to make that commitment. He's not going to punish us or reject us if we are genuine. But watch out if we're not genuine. If we are caught by the return of Christ, God will make an absolutely righteous judgment in our case. He alone knows our hearts. But if, like some, like the man who came to the wedding feast without a garment, knowing full well what he was doing, if like him, we have deliberately put things off, deliberately said to our God, look, I've got too many other important things to do, watch out. That's the lesson that comes home to us. In John chapter 5, Christ said this, marvel not at this, for the hour is coming in the which all that are in the grave shall hear his voice, and they shall come forth, they that have done good, unto the resurrection of life. He means eternal life. They will be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, and the process of rebuilding in their case will be completed by glorification. But they that have done evil, unto the resurrection of condemnation. Let's make sure when that day comes that we've got our act together and we stand amongst the righteous.